democracynow.org. It took place in Suffern, New York. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, and Tarina Nadura. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Naguer, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Pesta Godarz. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is local activist Don Merrill, who has recently set up a website to get dedicated to comparing various state-level constitutions.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 19th year of the Portland Revels. The Portland Revels will perform 11 shows between December 6th and December 15th. That's the Portland Revels, December 6th to the 15th at the Scottish Rite Center in downtown Portland. More information about the show can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It's 8 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, many people have no idea how our lives are affected by the decisions of state governments based on state constitutions. Our guest is Don Merrill, and he wants to change that with his new website. It's called stateconstitutions.us. You can not only read and compare state constitutions, you can download audio files of each one like an ebook. You can learn about the most recent news relating to constitutional challenges around the country. It's amazing. And Don, you're just hoping people will take that information and run with it and make their state the best state they can be. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Lisa.
Talk about this project. I mean, if you're listening right now, go to your computer and dial this up. stateconstitutions.us, because you have to see it to believe it. So what's on there? What does it do?
Primarily what the site does is it gives people the option to compare state constitutions first in terms of how they look. They all look the same because states all have their constitutions in different formats. They're hard to find. They're hard to compare when you find them. They're hard to search once you find them. So I put them all in one place, made them all look the same, and made them all searchable. And then I created an audio file based on the uniformity of each constitution. And then that file is downloadable so people can download it like an audiobook. They can put it on their iPod or their iPad and listen to it. And the other thing is I time referenced the audio files to the text. So someone can listen to the audio file while they're reading the text. They see something that they want to hear again, they can go to the audio file. If they hear something they want to read, they can go to the text. So the two are referenced to each other. And this is the first website that does that. And that's some of the stuff that's on the site.
I have to say, this is just the kind of educational platform that kids and senior citizens and middle-aged people and all kinds of people could totally get into. It's amazing, just the idea that you could listen to the constitutions. And also, it's kind of beautiful on that site because you do have, and this is weird, but what the constitutions are originally written on are sort of beautiful. So you have those images too. So now I want to dig into this a little bit more. State constitutions, and they're in their audio files. What are some of the things that you'll hope people will be able to do? Like, say, if somebody was really interested in single-payer healthcare in this country, or say, for example, you're really interested in marijuana laws in different states, what do you think that people would be able to do, say, to research those issues?
Well, Lisa, one of the first things I wanted to say is I have a degree in political science, and I consider myself politically aware, but I am in no way a constitutional scholar. But with that said, what I hope people will be able to find using the site is an easy way to sort of search for the issues that mean the most to them. Like you had talked about medical marijuana. There's all kinds of issues that people don't realize are really state issues. Americans tend to focus on the federal constitution as the be-all and end-all of the guide to our day-to-day lives, when actually the federal constitution was really designed to be a backstop only. The founders of the federal constitution, as well as the founders of individual state constitutions, knew that the states were going to be the place that really set down the guidelines for civil rights and civil liberties for our day-to-day lives. The closer our government is to us, the more personal it becomes. And it seemed to me in doing this project that there wasn't really an easy way for people to be able to take the stuff that affects them in their day-to-day life and sort of look at our state founding documents and see, well, where is that in there? What does that mean to me? So this site helps people do that.
What's fascinating is too that this is a deep dive. This site is a deep dive. It's got a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's got the whole constitutions on there. It's not like going to a Reader's Digest site and getting a quick hit, which is what we're so used to in our culture. We're told, you know, we used to think of that as the USA Today model because that was the first newspaper that put little stories in the paper. So we're used to giving small focus on things, unless it's Game of Thrones episodes. Okay, truth. But for a lot of people, we don't even know how to crack that constitution. I bet a lot of people are not sure how to spell that word. Good spellers, probably. So let's take one example just really quick. What if someone wanted to understand, like, compare and contrast, say, I don't know, racial laws in Georgia versus racial laws in Oregon? Someone could go onto your site and literally do a word search on those constitutions and come up with the language. Talk about that a little bit, the function of the site, what people could do.
Right. The way the site is structured in terms of search is there is a search box that allows you to search the entire site or individual states. If you wanted to search, for instance, the word race, you would go to the search page, select entire site, type in race, and then what you'll get is a search page return that will show where race is referenced in every constitution. And then if you wanted to say where race was in the Alabama Constitution versus the Oregon Constitution, you would search those two individually, and each state would return how many references to race are in that constitution. Which is a good thing because, like you said, sometimes it's very hard to find. I mean, some of these constitutions, for instance, the Alabama Constitution, you want to use Alabama as an example, it's the longest constitution in the country. It's the longest constitution in the world. The Alabama Constitution has 377,000 words. It has 880 amendments. I mean, it's crazy. The smallest constitution in the country is Vermont's. It's like 8,500 words. But still, 8,500 words is a lot to search through if you're looking for race. And sometimes these terms are not where you would expect them to be. You know, they might be in parts of the Constitution that have to do with labor or taxes, or, you know, they might not be under the civil rights, civil liberties portion of the Constitutions, which tend to be the first, you know, the first section of a Constitution. That tends to be where the aspects of civil rights and civil liberties as they affect the individuals are. Yeah.
That's amazing. So we are live in Studio 2 with Don Merrill. He's a journalist, actually, a journalist, broadcaster, been in media. Your whole life, it looks like. And I'll ask you a little bit more about your background in a minute. But we're talking about his new website that he developed, stateconstitutions.us. Now, I was cracking up a little earlier because there's a really fascinating aspect of this website that is going to surprise you, listeners, because Don has done personality profiles on the states, and there's glossaries in there so you can understand the terms. Talk about that whole concept a little bit. Like, what do you mean personalities of the states and personality profiles of the states? Where does that come from? You're so science-based, and it cracks me up that you went in that direction. So talk about that.
Well, the reason why I included that part is because the 50 states constitute one nation. I mean, e pluribus unum, you know, of one many. But each state has its own very unique personality. And in 2008, a social scientist named Peter Renfro and two of his associates used something called the five-factor model. And the five-factor model is a psychological construct that sort of identifies the five emotions that sort of govern human behavior. And so what they did was they looked at these five emotions and they sort of connected those emotions to, you know, where people live geographically. And they were able to see that some states have a predisposition to some of the five over others. And so they were able to sort of create a map. And the map sort of outlines the character of each state. Oregon has, I don't have all the stuff in front of me, but on the website it shows, if you go to the state personalities page of the website and you click on Oregon, it'll show how Oregon, how much of each of these five traits Oregon has. And you can compare, you know, Oregon's personality to New York's personality, to Wyoming's personality. And the reason why I did that was because so that people could understand that states are very different. If you read their preambles, for instance, every constitution has a preamble. And each preamble, more or less, is the founder's promise to the state residents of what it will do for the states, how they all expect to work together to create this thing called a state. Preambles are very different, and preambles sort of outline the personality. So states, constitutions are sort of like personality profiles of states. And I put this page on the website so that people could sort of see that in a concrete way.
Yeah, and so I'm just going to read that. This is awesome. Okay, so the five personality traits are extroversion, agreeableness, conscientiousness, neuroticism, and openness. And I'm just going to read a couple. This is just such a hoot. I want to talk about this a little bit more in a minute, but it says, like, Californians have less extroversion than the average, are about average for agreeableness, are about average for conscientiousness, have less neuroticism than the average, and much more openness than the average. You're imagining someone naked on the beach. It's just cracking me up. What I really like about this aspect of the personalities, Don, is that We refer to states this way all the time, you know. We were just talking about this. Oregon, of course they're going to legalize pot. Oh, that's Oregon for you. Oh, Texas, yep, they're going to outlaw women's health. We talk about the states as if they're people, as if they have personalities all the time. This is the first time I've ever heard someone who had an actual term to attach to what we do when we talk about states like that. I've heard people for years say that Oregon is the Arkansas of the West Coast. I mean, it's fascinating when you look at it. Listeners, too, I want to open up the phone lines. And this is the real purpose of this conversation now. Are you doing social change work that involves state government? Call us with your story about activism on that level. We'd really like to hear your ground level stories about what you're dealing with, especially, I mean, I can think of a number of people that are looking at maybe not constitutional challenges or changes, but the work you're doing is affected by what the Constitution says allows or doesn't allow, okay? So, listeners, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Call us with your story about activism. I would love to hear from the single payer people, especially. I know you're out there. I know you're listening, and I'd like to know what's happening with your work right now. Also, there's a number of people doing stuff with marijuana legalization in Oregon, and that thing has taken all kinds of different directions. So I would really love to hear from people your state level activism. And 503-231-8187. Don, I just want to ask you, like, so you're talking about the one state constitution that's got like almost a million words. Do you notice anything different about, say, I don't know, the laws or the personality of the states with really long constitutions versus really short ones? Because Vermont, short constitution, we think of it as a progressive state where everybody's sort of homogeneous and maybe they don't argue a lot. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I think you said Alabama, the longest one?
377.
So now there's a place that was right in the thick of the Civil Rights Movement. So people must have been doing battle on some of these things. So it's like it implies a lot of reform or something, but I don't know if that's accurate. What do you notice about states with really long constitutions?
Well, when I was taking some foreign languages in college, some of the language professors had this rule of thumb. English is a language with few rules and many exceptions. And Russian, for instance, is a language with many rules and few exceptions. And you could sort of draw from that states with very long constitutions have to have everything codified. They want to nail everything down. They don't want to leave anything to chance. Whereas states with very small constitutions sort of leave it up to people to sort of interpret the law themselves. They don't feel that everything has to be spelled out for people. So, you know, you might be able to extend that logic and think that, you know, if a state has a very long constitution, they're not really open to a lot of I don't want to say that this is a hard and fast rule, but you know, states that have a lot of rules and a lot of laws tend to not give a lot of flexibility in their interpretation, where states that are smaller sort of leave it open to people to interpret the laws more than their own way, their sims.
I'm looking at the state personalities page and it's saying Alabama, less agreeableness than the average. I'm just cracking up. Okay, we do have a caller. Of course, the number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have Richard on the phone. Richard, what's going on with you? Are you working on something?
Well, yes, I am. But can I ask a question? And let me admit that I didn't get the first of the show. So can I ask your caller or your guest a question about the searchability of his site?
Of course.
Excuse me, guest, and I didn't get your name either, but...
Don. His name is Don Merrill.
Don Merrill. Hi, Don.
Hi.
Is your site searchable as to the restrictions on travel? I mean, can you get details out of the constitutions, or are they just spread on there?
Well, all 50 of the state constitutions are on the site, and uh-huh. And if you search for specific terms, it'll return those terms to you on a search page.
Excellent. And can you do a spreadsheet on comparative with one search? Can you say search all?
Well, yeah, it'll search all. It'll search the entire site, or it'll search one constitution, whichever one you select, it'll search it individually.
Excellent. And you're going to mention the site a few times during the show, right?
Stateconstitutions.us. Stateconstitutions.us.
Okay, here's my area of activism that is strongly influenced by the Constitution of Oregon, and I'm just wondering about the comparison between Oregon and other states. In our Constitution, it says that all power is inherent in the people. That means the little word all precludes any other power being superlative. And we have a newfangled contraption called cars, and these things are a lot safer than horses. And yet some people say that when people get into cars, they become subject to somebody's regulation. And I go, what? Where's that? Where's that in the Constitution?
All right, Richard, thanks a lot for calling. And I want you to be well, and thanks for calling. And I think that one of the interesting issues that Richard's bringing up about constitutions is sometimes it seems like the smallest words are maybe some of the most important words.
Well, the thing about constitutions is that constitutions do not show all of the law that a state operates on. But constitutions are the basis of all civil...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Constitutions are the basis of all civil, criminal, and administrative law. So, I mean, if you wanted to learn everything about every law that governs a state, of course, you'd have to go to a law library. You'd have to read all of the state statutes. All of that stuff is not in the Constitution. But all of that stuff cannot be without the Constitution, because if something is a law that has not been, you know, checked and approved, you know, by the Supreme Court or by the legislature vis-a-vis the Constitution, then it becomes unconstitutional. So you can't have administrative law or civil law or criminal law that is not based on the Constitution. By reading these constitutions and making these constitutions available to citizens, I'm not saying that once you learn the Constitution, you know everything there is to know. But what happens is, a lot of times when there is a conflict between branches of government or between citizens and a branch of government, it comes down to the Constitution. So if citizens know the Constitution and the Constitution is accessible to them, then they're much more armed. That's the thing. One of the reasons why I did this site was because I was just so disappointed with the way the federal government has been behaving. The federal government has been behaving very poorly. It is not representing us as well as I think it should. And the federal Constitution, fortunately, because we're structured in a federalist way, we have federalism as a structure of government, we can access the government at different levels. And state government is one of the ways we can access. So if the federal government is not acting right, then we always have the state governments that we can fall back on. And I believe that the state governments and the federal governments should be in a tug of war with each other. And that helps keep them both credible. And we should be making sure that they are always on opposite ends of that rope. And we should be in the middle, making sure that they are doing their best for us always, both branches of government.
And we're going to go back to the phone lines. But listeners, look, we are live in Studio 2 with Don Merrill. We're talking about his new website. Just went live on Veterans Day. And it gives you the opportunity to get in touch with state constitutional laws. We spend so much of our time talking about the Constitution, the federal Constitution. We all learned how to do the preamble from Schoolhouse Rock. I'm not going to embarrass myself by doing that. No, I won't. No, I won't. Yes, I will. No, I know. Anyway, the phone lines are open, and listeners, are you doing social change work that involves state government? Is what you're doing impacted by the Constitution? We want to hear from you. Call us with your story about activism there. Really want to hear this morning. I'd love to hear from single-payer people, because you guys are doing a lot, and I think that you're impacted by this. Also, people that are active in cannabinoid legalization, there's so many different kinds. And the phone number, of course, is 503-231-8187. And we have Joanne on the phone. Joanne, what do you think about it?
I got some questions. Yes.
Okay.
Hello. I was wondering, maybe you don't want to talk about this, but I was wondering about anarchists. Do they support constitutions in government and states? And also in your work, traits and personality work, does the size of the state come into it? Like California's big and Texas is big.
What a fascinating question.
And Hawaii. Also, what about Hawaii? Hawaii is way out there in the ocean. And also, what about the District of Columbia? I'll listen and hang up.
Thank you, Joanne. That's awesome about D.C. So this is what I think that Joanne's first question is a really fascinating one. What about anarchists? And I know this is not an anarchy website, but a lot of people in our culture equate anarchy with chaos. And yet that's not what anarchism is within a political construct. Do you want to respond to that? Because I could respond to it a little bit. I don't know if you have a sense about it.
I don't really have a sense about it. I don't really know how. I do know that a lot of constitutions don't address anarchy per se, and it seems that constitutions are by their nature structured, you know, and they base themselves on the legitimacy of a majority, and that, you know, that would seem to be against or in opposition to what the concept of anarchy is. Mm-hmm. But I don't really have a good sense
answer
of
that.
It.
This is what I would say. There's lots of different kinds of anarchist and anarchy, and there's different ways that people use that. And traditionally, there is sort of a political movement called anarcho-syndicalism and stuff like that too. So you have political organization around anarchy, and by and large, what it generally means, though, is it's decentralized government. So people want to not have to answer to a big state, you know, godfather kind of government. They want small, decentralized
government. Oh, well, some people would call that libertarianism.
Exactly. And so that's one of the things that always fascinated me the most. You know, do the anarchists hang out with the libertarians? Do they have a lot to talk about? There's a place when we're talking about constitutional politics, Don, and you listeners out there, where, you know, we see the Tea Party. We see people going so far to the right that they come back along the left-hand side. And
right.
that it's a spectrum. It fascinates me. And we do have a couple of callers, and that number is 503-231-8187. This is fascinating. We have Jeff on the line. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I just wanted to look at, I just wanted to say that this is really important work.
I think
and,
so too.
It seems to me that the basic structure of our society needs to be available and understandable and in a form that everybody can access. You know, I mean, otherwise we're all being separated by the structure itself, and that does nobody any good, especially when we're based on the idea of unity.
Yeah, Jeff, and you know, something else, when I was putting this site together, I talked to a couple people who, you know, work for think tanks and some legislators, and I got the impression from them that sometimes government does not always want passionate and informed citizens. Because, you know, it seems that government, or at least the people who are in government, they want us to be engaged up until and during the election. And after that, they more or less want us to do what they want us to do until the next election. They like people who are passionate, but not too passionate. And they like people who are knowledgeable, but not too knowledgeable. And if you have people who are passionate and knowledgeable, then they sort of hold legislators to account, and that's not something legislators always want.
And so when we say they, I think we're talking about lawmakers, members of Congress, legislators, whether
well,
it's state or
that
federal.
That brings me sort of around to the question. I mean, a lot of that happened, I think, because of the power, you know, power being consolidated over time, and it moves around. But it brings me to the question, and that is, have you encountered any resistance, and how did you fund it?
Thanks a lot for calling, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I think you shoestringed this.
Yeah, I did. I didn't.
You had a broad
no
idea,
funding.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. Just the time that I had, you know, because I just wanted to do something that I thought could help people feel like they had more of a hand in what their government was doing. I don't think that people engage in their constitutions until they encounter an issue that's personal to them, you know, which is fine. But you want to be able to know that when it's time for you to engage with your constitution, that it is user friendly. And sometimes I'm not sure that people assume that their constitution or their government is user friendly and accessible until it comes time for them to try to engage with it. And they realize that it's not.
It's too late then.
It's too late. And so that's why I wanted to make this accessible so that people could maybe preview their constitution, you know, whenever they get a minute. I mean, you know, for all the time that people spend on Facebook, I'm sure they can spend a few minutes just checking out their government. And this makes it much easier for people to do that.
And we do have another caller. That number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have Mary on the phone. Mary, what are you doing lately?
Well, actually, I was on KBOO on the 25th of September at 8 o'clock. And I would like to encourage your guests to check out that interview. But I do have, and I have to admit, I just joined your program, but it was right up my alley, and so I immediately called in. I only have one question, and that is, on your website, at now or at some point in the future, I would like you to put a link to ORS 337.275 (2). And that's the law in Oregon that requires that explicit phonics be taught in the classroom.
Well, Mary, the way the site is structured is the only thing that's on the site is constitutions. Like I put all, the Oregon's constitution.
It's called stateconstitutions.us.
So.
Oh, okay.
So and
all
the
right.
And the reason why I don't link to specific laws is because that would make the site too specific.
Statelaws.com.
Right. If people want to search state laws, then they can go to, you know, the Oregon State Law Library, and they can read state laws and state statutes, Oregon revised statutes online. This is only constitutions. And that's one of the reasons why I did it this way, was because if you go to Google and you type in a search term in Google, you might get 2 or 3 million returns. And some of them are not, most of them are not relevant, and they're not easily searchable. The reason why I made this site this way is so that the only text, the only information that someone is going to get back on a search on my site is from the Constitution itself. There's no convolution. There's nothing.
Does your site also include information on how to change your state constitution?
You know, the funny thing is, all constitutions have information in them on citizen referendums on how people can change, because that's where people get the information to change constitutions from within the Constitution.
Codified in the Constitution. Now, Mary.
Thank you very much.
Mary. So you have been working to do educational reform in Oregon in a very specific way, right?
That's right.
Okay, great. So this is what I wanted to ask you, because I didn't catch your last name and I didn't get to hear that interview that was that happened. Was it last week? So you?
No, it was September 20th.
Awesome, Mary. I just don't have a calendar in front of me right now.
That's okay.
So, but what
That's
I'm asking you is, as you are, you're agitating for this very specific thing. How is it going for you? What are you finding? What obstacles are you finding in your state educational reform project there?
Well, just today I saw on the news that the schools are getting raped again.
Okay, so that doesn't tell me anything. Can you be specific?
The state just adopted, not just adopted, recently adopted smarter balanced assessment. And it's another corporate ploy. The schools had to change from Oaks because the reading scores were so bad. So they've got smarter balance, and a lot of states are doing this. It's not just Oregon. I've got a vigil going out in front of Cornelius Elementary in Cornelius, Oregon, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody that comes by.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, and be safe out there. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving, and we're live in Studio 2 with Don Merrill. We're talking about his new website, State Constitutions. .us. It's an amazing, I'm saying it again, it's a deep dive in understanding the real roots of your state law, as opposed to listing your state laws on there, Oregon revised statute, stuff like that. By the way, it's not hard to find any state's revised statutes online, and it is fascinating. And I am a hamster. You know what? I'm a hoarder. I should be on that hoarder show, except I'm an information hoarder, and I need like an intervention sometimes. We were talking about that too. Oregon revised statute is so fascinating. So if you could take like a constitution, and if you're really interested in something, so Mary's literally talking about specific educational programs that she wants to see reformed. It's those standardized tests. And so if somebody's got something specific like that, they want to influence state law. Is there a shortcut to figuring out whether, you know, how to figure out whether the Constitution affects that? Or should people, would it be informative for people to go, say, if Mary went on your website and searched for tests or education or standardized tests or something like that? What do you think?
Right. Every state constitution has a statute that requires it to provide education to the children of the state.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, you can see that in every constitution. It's the responsibility of the state to provide education, free education, to the children of the state. And so you can go to a state constitution, any state constitution, and type in school, type in education, type in and the way the search box works is you can type in more than one word and it will group words together. So if you type in children and education, it will return search results that have children and education in the sentence. So it helps you narrow your search. So if you wanted to find out where education and children were in the same sentence or in the same part of the same document, you could do that. And it's not specific like the Oregon revised statutes, but like I said, the Oregon revised statutes are based on the Constitution, not the other way around. So if you wanted to see where the basis for the Oregon revised statutes as they relate to education are, then you could go to that part of the Constitution, and then that would be where you would start from.
That's so fascinating. And we have other callers, but like Richard called earlier, I know that his real concern is constitutional laws regarding motor vehicle licensing and regulation. So if you say, for example, you wanted to marry, she wants to change these standardized tests, she could go to look at the language that that codifies what Oregon is supposed to be doing around education. And that's like the wall. That's like the studs to the wall. That's like the basis of what she can think about agitating for in the legislature. And we do have a couple callers, but I want to say this other thing, though. When we have our state lawmakers, you know, Senator Chip Shields and Representative Lou Frederick, people like that, they are really very bound by the Constitution. Those people really pay attention to that. So if you have some of this information about what the Constitution says that you can't test people in a certain way. I mean, I don't know what it would be, but those people would be really receptive to that. They'd be impressed that someone even knew that. That's fascinating. Wednesday Talk Radio, Studio 2, Don Merrill, stateconstitutions.us, 503-231-8187. And we have another caller. I'm sorry, we have Paul.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Paul, what's going on, man?
I haven't tuned in a long time, and actually, I didn't think this was going to be very interesting, but I'm finding it fascinating. All I really want to do is echo the comments of another caller there. You've got a kind of a classic forest versus trees. He's laid out the forest here, and I just want to compliment him. I think this is a wonderful, wonderful pursuit. I would hope some national publication would pick up on this. I read the New Yorker. And I think it's just fascinating in general. I can't address your specific, Lisa, your specific interest here in specific things. I'm very interested, and I hope he writes a book and makes some money off of this. I just think it's great. No, this is the kind of stuff that the internet should be doing. You know,
it's an information trove. Paul, are there issues like on the state level that are super interested and important to you?
Well, right now I'm into the lottery business here. I perceive a tremendous conflict between the state benefiting and administering this kind of addictive sort of thing so that they don't have to tax the wealthy. Basically, it's a tax on the poor and the least able to pay taxes.
You know, and on that, I just have to say really quick, you know, I'm not the biggest Oregonian hugger in the universe, but Harry Esteve did a gorgeous series on that. It was for a week. It was the week before last.
Right.
And he drilled down into numbers and showed that all the profits that the lottery delivers come from a small number of addicted people.
It's an inherent conflict of interest here with the state, you know, who's supposed to be kind of our parent or whatever. And I just think it's awful.
God, Paul, it makes me wonder what there is about the lottery or something like that in the Constitution. Now, I'm not going to run there because I need to eat breakfast first. But it's interesting, and I'm not sure.
And many of the states, I've talked to people in other states that have varieties of lotteries, and it isn't just here, of course.
Right. Anyway, well, thank you so much for calling, Paul.
Congratulations, Don. I think you're just doing a wonderful job there. I'm so pleased somebody's figured something out here.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
What Paul had mentioned, a lot of state constitutions don't mention lotteries per se, but they do mention a term called parimutuel, which is another term that refers to games of chance, horse racing, dog racing. They call it parimutuel betting. So even though a lot of states don't use the term lottery per se, they do use parimutuel.
And it's all about your keywords sometimes.
It is.
You know that?
And the thing is, a lot of times when constitutions are written, I remember when I was in school, we were told that many of the people who are in legislatures, who are legislators, senators, representatives, they tend to be attorneys. And the language of attorneys is not the language of the ordinary person. And so constitutions are drafted with that language, not the
It's like Shakespeare.
Right. Not the common language of the ordinary person.
Right.
And so you have to be able – and so that's why the site also has a glossary. What I did was when I went through all the constitutions, I tried to identify the terms that seemed to be the most used terms that were unfamiliar. And so there are a lot of Latin terms. There are a lot of terms from other languages. For instance, the term sine die, And that means when the legislature adjourns, it adjourns without setting a time in the future for the next readjournment. So instead of saying the session is over, closed, they'll say we adjourn sine die, which is sort of the legislature saying see you later as opposed to goodbye.
But we don't know what that means.
Right. And so that's what the glossary is there for.
It's pretty fascinating. I have to say really quickly, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, Ross Freeman Levin interviews Seattle HempFest Executive Director Vivian McPeak about Washington State's process of legalizing and regulating marijuana for adults. This stuff is fascinating, man. They also discuss the history of Seattle HempFest and what the impact of the world's largest marijuana advocacy event plays in the overall movement. At 9:30, economist Richard Wolff interviews Professor Sheila D. Collins about her new book about lessons from the New Deal for today's economic crisis. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features updates on protests against the police killing of unarmed teen Andy Lopez and on the dire situation for children in occupied Palestine. And investigative reporter Robert Perry, yay, discusses his recent article, Contra Cocaine Was a Real Conspiracy. Love Robert Perry. At 11 on the KBOO Bike Show, the topic is how bike friendliness translates to business. The guest is Dr. Kelly Clifton, professor of civil and environmental engineering at Portland State University, who teaches transportation planning and policy. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're in Studio 2 with Don Merrill. We're talking about his amazing new web platform, State Constitutions. .us. And let's go back to the phone lines. Karen's on the phone. Karen, call back. Justin's on the phone. Justin, what's going on?
Well, I first want to say thanks to Don for creating a resource, because I think information's one thing, a resource is another thing. And I really feel like this is kind of in that fundamental time where our federal government's dysfunctional. And, you know, there's a real effort to, you know, invalidate the function of a federal government and then move power back to state governments, and knowing what those repercussions mean when every state may have different personalities, as you say, and different agendas as such. but the bigger question I have is one where, you know, if you want a functional government, you know, and I believe right and left, everybody wants a country that works. And on the level of optimism, you know, how to have that, and where Don's experience with reviewing all these state constitutions, you know, state, if you're different, like changing things like campaign finance reform, or I believe shifting away from a two-party system that only is one party, which is the incumbent, then you have a situation where how do you instill that political optimism that you could actually revolve back to a nation of governance that can focus on issues and really solve problems for everyone? And I'm just kind of curious, in his overview of the state constitutions, how much of that has kind of informed his insight where power advocacy, because I mean, we see it with ALEC on state legislation, or it's reproduced on the state government level. Those with resources generally can influence policy, whether it's medical marijuana and you don't like the smell of it next door, or whether you want to legalize it. So I'm just kind of curious where the messy intersection of optimism and then individual desires that can vary so vastly.
That's an awesome question, Justin. I love that question. Can you answer that, Don? It's like how sometimes that, I think that's one reason why people don't pay attention to their state constitution. We're overwhelmed. It's like we assume that we would never understand that, and it's kind of depressing. So as you went through all this stuff, where did you do you feel optimistic about it? And you know, how does that play into it?
I'm very optimistic. I almost get kind of teary-eyed when I think about it, because I have such faith in the American people. I have faith in Texans. I have faith in Floridians. I have faith in Oregonians, Utahns. The people really are the ones that drive this car. You know, the legislators sort of think that they're driving the car, but they're not. And the problem is they convince us that they're driving the car.
I think the legislators know that they're not, and that they, yeah.
Now, I know.
So we have a valet parking government right now.
Thanks, Justin.
To park in the car.
But anyway, go ahead, Don.
I know
you guys, thank you very much for the work you're doing, Don, and Lisa, the work that you do.
Thank you.
I'll bow out.
Thanks, all right, Justin.
But talk a little more about optimism. We need some.
I think I really have a lot of faith in the people who occupy this country and tell the legislators, you know, what we want. We're just so distracted, I think. And I think that, you know, we know what we want in terms of what good governance is, and you know, what our quality of life, what we want it to be, and how we want to treat the environment, and how we want to treat our children and animals and each other. I mean, we all know that. But we're so distracted. And by reading these constitutions, it reminded me that, you know, a lot of this stuff really is based in us, in the citizen, in the individual, in the person. And so the thing about state constitutions is that the closer our government is to us, the more responsive it is. And I think that the problem with federal legislators, and this is not to say that state constitutions are necessarily better than federal constitutions. It's not to say that, you know, legislators and representatives and senators are not, you know, doing their best to be representatives of the people. But I think people, they just get distracted. They get distracted. They forget.
I think we're afraid, too. I think that we spend a lot of time being afraid in this country.
Well, I think that one of the reasons why we are afraid is because we tend to think that there's nothing we can do.
Or that we could end up on the street tomorrow, too. There's no safety net here. And go ahead.
And so the thing about the larger the government, the further away our representatives tend to be. And I think that people, they get elected and they go to Washington and they sort of forget why they're there. Whereas with a state constitution, those people don't go anywhere. They're here. It's like,
you got them.
That's right. And so, you know, if Senator Merkley does something that, you know, we don't necessarily like, then, you know, he can be. And he goes away to Washington and we don't exactly know what he's doing. Then, you know, when he comes back, then we can, you know, we can let him know how we feel. But the state representatives and the state legislators, they don't go to Washington. They're here. They're in Bend and they're in Eugene and they're in Portland and they're in Corvallis. And you can walk up to their front door and say, what the heck are you doing? And so that's why the state government and local government is, I think, much more important, and we have much more advocacy. And so getting back to Justin's question, I think that there is lots of hope. And I think that if people would just read their constitution, just get a sense of what's in there, then they can see that really a lot of this stuff depends on you. It depends on your advocacy. It depends on your knowledge. It depends on your commitment. You know, and if you don't do anything, then the laws sort of run themselves, and then they're open to the interpretation of whoever's in office at the time, and that's not something you want.
Right. You know, the other way I've heard that said, the point you just made was, the farther away your tax dollars go, the less effective they are for you. The farther away your tax dollars go, the less they do for you. It's just the same thing that you just said. The farther away the government is, the less responsive it is for you. And we do have a bunch of callers. We've got Francis on the phone. Francis, what are you thinking about?
Well, what you're talking about, let's see. I have a couple of questions, but first I want to ask, I don't know how all states operate, but in Oregon, there are the agencies, state agencies, usually their administrators, write administrative rules to instruct their people in their agencies on how to perform and operate under certain Oregon statutes. So they write administrative rules that apply to those statutes. And sometimes I think those are up for interpretation. Are you familiar with that process?
I know that a lot of the administrative law, the criminal law, the civil law, all of those laws are based on the Constitution.
Right.
So, yeah.
And then different agencies among the state agencies, their administrators, when there's a new law written, they write administrative rules to instruct or guide on how to implement the new law.
Right. State agencies state agencies tend to be offices of the executive branch, the governor.
Right.
You know, those agencies write their laws, and they're responsible to the governor, who is in turn responsible to the Constitution.
Okay. So if someone finds that an administration or an agency has administrative rules that are said to coincide with the state statute, but maybe certain little things that they do don't.
You know what strikes
the process that a person would follow through the legislation or through court, or how would they have that administrative rule looked at?
Well, sometimes a law can be an administrative law can make its way to the courts, and then the court can rule that unconstitutional.
So a person would have to file something in court in order to have that rule looked at.
This is a really interesting and important point. And I'm so glad that Frances is asking this.
I do have another question too.
Okay, but she's basically kind of saying, where do laws come from in a way? And so we see these administrative rules that hit people like wet fish all the time, and you're like, what?
Right.
What? That actually sort of goes a little bit back to the issues that Richard was talking about earlier. Administrative rules about how you get your driver's license or whatever. That's fascinating. But I just want to say, even when we're talking about the Constitution, that's open to interpretation, right? All this stuff can be hashed out in court. But okay, go ahead, Frances. What was your second question?
Lastly, because of the way I was raised and my background and my education, when I hear Constitution, I always think of constitutional rights. And I'm hoping that your goal is to have people be able, one of your goals, to be able to assert their rights in some kind of formal way. For example, the drug-free zones and things recently in the city of Portland that were determined to be unconstitutional. The state court determined that, not the federal. And people, citizens of this city, I'm thinking of young people in particular, are fully aware of their constitutional rights. However, for them to be able to assert those in certain situations could cause them a lot of problems.
It's absolutely true.
Speaking of law enforcement.
Yeah, if a young person stood there.
I'm hoping that people are aware of the constitutional rights that people have, that others will step up and support young people who have had their rights violated and who have no resources to assert them.
All right. Thanks for calling,
Frances.
I love it when people can take these sort of more like on paper issues, esoteric issues, and just plug it into something that happens every day on the street. And Frances, I think, just did that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have a couple more callers. We have Deborah on the phone. Deborah, what are you thinking about today?
I have a question. It can be very difficult for an individual advocate to take on a project like this just to find the funding to do it. And I'm wondering how you set up this project so you could dedicate the time it took to do all this work. Did you have a fellowship or a grant?
Thanks for calling, Deborah. Talk a little bit about your background, just briefly, Don, because you have a long background in media, and you took a walk up to doing this. He sat in a chair and did it. He didn't ask for money from the feds or anything. So talk a little bit more about your background.
Well, I got the idea about maybe 2 years ago when I first started hearing about this. Well, actually, it was longer than that, when I heard about the warrantless wiretap program during the Bush administration. And I started thinking about, I wonder if there's – because I wanted to know, what was the individual's recourse if they wanted to push back against federal government surveillance. And I started wondering, do the states have their own surveillance programs? I know that Oregon takes money from the Transportation Security Administration for a program called InfraGuard. And InfraGuard is a program that they get money to sort of upgrade their infrastructure for public transportation, buses, trains. But included in that money is technology that allows them to put cameras and microphones onto buses and trains so that they can monitor what people are saying and doing on public transportation. And that's part of the surveillance apparatus. And I wondered, if Oregon is doing that, how many other states are doing that?
Oh my God, that's where this came from?
Well, that's just one of the programs. I mean, and so it just made me start to wonder, you know, like, what else are other states doing? And so I remember there was a meeting that KABU had at Tabor Space back in May, and I wanted to do something for the community, and so then I transcribed that interview, and then that process made me think, well, maybe this is how I can do the constitutions. And so then I started thinking about, okay, I've already had the idea for a couple of years, and then I've had this transcription experience with Tabor Space, then maybe I can put the two together. And so then I just really, it's like Lisa said, I just sat down in a chair and looked for each constitution and transcribed it, and then put it in a format and then built the website and then created the audio files. And so there was no funding.
Passion. That's fascinating. I love that. I just think that's so great. And of course, the website we're talking about is stateconstitutions.us. Stateconstitutions.us. Let's go back to the phone line. Let's see if we can get the callers in. Do we have Magical Engineering Pixies on the phone? He's got stuff going on. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are live in Studio 2 with Don Merrill. He is a former KABU news producer. And so he's got
current.
Awesome. Good. Good. That's what I wanted to hear. And he has, you've got this, you came from the military, the army, you came from federal government job, and that does something to a person. I bet that planted a little booster rocket in you when you finally got the idea. You're like,
well, I was in the military for about 12 years. And then I worked for the federal government as a civil servant for about 12 years. So I know the federal government pretty well. And it just sort of struck me that, sometimes the federal government has, I mean, it's a good government. It's a good country. We're good people. But I mean, people, they get distracted. They get confused. They, you know, get dominated by self-interest. And so, you know, I just think that they need a little help. And so, you know, I believe that this will be the help that people can, because state constitutions, what happens, I think, a lot of times is the Supreme Court will make a decision, and then that frees states to make either decisions in line with the Supreme Court decision or against the Supreme Court decision. Mm-hmm. And it works the other way, too. States make individual decisions, and then that compels the Supreme Court to look at the issue again. And so there has to be this back and forth. But that doesn't always mean that they're going to agree. Each constitution has a provision that says we of this state submit to the federal government as a supreme authority.
There we're looking again, that marijuana law, and is the federal government going to let the states have it? Fascinating, right. But go ahead.
Right. Related to that is this issue of same-sex marriage. Now, right now, there are several states that whose state militias will not issue ID cards to same-sex partners. And that brings up the issue of, is a state militia the property of the ownership of the governor, who is the executive of the state, or does the state militia belong to the Pentagon, which is the president's military?
Wow.
So then that's why, you know, so you have a state's issue there where the federal government is saying, issue the ID cards, and the governor is saying, this is my military, this is the state militia, I'm not going to issue because our Constitution does not allow same-sex marriage.
So it's like a chess game. The Constitution is the rules of the game, and the laws themselves are sort of the moves that people make on the board.
You can
say
that.
I'm just looking at it like that. So
yeah.
We have one more caller. Let's try to squeeze the caller in. We have Deborah. Deborah, what's going on?
Yes, hi. Don Merrill, your name sounds very familiar. My uncle was Tom McCall, and I'm not sure if it's the same one, but I just got in on the end of your show, and I wondered about, I believe you said you had a website where you're translating all 50 states' constitutions into understandable plain English. Is that right?
Nobody can do that. I'm just teasing you. No. You know what? We're going to take your question. We're gonna let you rest off the air, and we're gonna have Don right now re-explain the whole thing that you've been working on. And thank you for calling. Call sooner next time. We want to hear from you, Deborah.
Okay, Deborah. The website is a site that allows people to go to one place. place to search all 50 state constitutions. All 50 state constitutions are at one site, www.stateconstitutions.us. When you go to the site, it does a couple of things. It provides you a glossary with terms that are in the constitutions that are explained. It gives you a search option that allows you to search all 50 state constitutions at once or each constitution individually.
For keywords, issues that are important to you.
It gives you a news feed that gives you the latest stories of issues of where constitutions are being challenged around the country. There is a reference page that gives you more information on where you can find more information about state constitutions.
You can download them as audio files like ebooks. That just fascinates me.
There is an image map on the front page where if you click a state, it'll take you directly to that state constitution. And finally, there's a little personality page on there where you can sort of compare the personalities of states.
And I'm just really going to quickly say, Joanne asked about that. Joanne, it looked to me like the smaller states were less neurotic. The bigger states were more likely to run naked down the beach. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Don Merrill. His site is stateconstitutions.us. Links to that right now at kbu.fm. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky, the studio dog. This show will be podcast on kbu.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on the show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle production of American Fiesta, starring Gary Wayne Cash, a witty, hopeful tale of imperfection and acceptance. American Fiesta will take place at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This Triangle production will run from November 29th through December 22nd. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:01. And coming right up on Political Perspectives, Ross Freeman Levin interviews Seattle HempFest Executive Director Vivian McPeak about Washington State's process of legalizing and regulating marijuana for adults. They also discuss the history of Seattle HempFest and what the impact of this world's largest marijuana advocacy event plays in the overall movement. At 9:30, economist Richard Wolff interviews Professor Sheila D. Collins about her new book about lessons from the New Deal for today's economic crisis. Excuse me. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints. Today features updates